But who cares about the rain? Let's think about the guitar. Leon is caught behind a snowbank, and so he's not here. But boy, we have a couple great guitarists to bring to you. In a little bit, we'll spend some time with a guitarist whose recordings we've been enjoying. That's Mark Teicholz from San Francisco. He's playing tonight at 7 o'clock at College Hall at Gonzaga. And let's hear from his recent album of the music of Ernesto Nazareth, Brigiero. Ernesto Nazareth, that was a Brigiero, played by my guest in the studio right now, Mark Teicholz. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, Vern.
And go ahead and pull that up so it's a little more comfortable. Just rotate it up a little bit. There you go.
Okay. Hello.
And we want you to be comfortable at all times.
Thank you.
a whole album of Ernesto Nazareth. What made you do this?
This was something that was due to my fortunate chance to get to know Sergio Assad.
Whom you teach with, right?
Yes. And he has been teaching at the conservatory for the last 7-8 years or so. And he is a prolific composer and arranger, as well as a great guitarist. And I remember sort of staring at his laptop one day and noticing he had all these files of different composers' names. And I said, "What's that? What's that? What's that?" And he said, "Oh, these are just some things that I don't know if anyone would be interested." And I said, "Are you crazy?" And I said, so I pointed to one of the files, and it was the Nazareth file. And he had 16 arrangements of these are piano pieces originally. Mm-hmm. And I said, "You have to publish them." And he said, "Oh, you think anyone would be interested?" And I said, you're insane. And so he said, "But I don't have time to finger them." So I said, "Well, I'll finger them." And so I fingered them, and then we published the fingerings of his arrangements. And then he said, "Well, we might as well record them." And so and he said, "I don't have time." So I said, "Okay, I'll record them." But I was initially terrible at playing them. I didn't have I couldn't get the swing of it, and I didn't have the right feeling. So he coached me so I could do a kind of a credible white boy version. And he helped me learn them, and so we recorded them.
If you call that a credible white boy version, then you at least fool this credible white boy.
Oh, well, good. Yeah, it's an album for white boys.
No, because it just had that really lovely. It was just right.
Well,
right in that, and then that really sweet swing of this music. So let's find out a little bit more about you. Even as you talk about your relationship with Sergio Assad, it sounds like there's a nice feeling of collegiality and community among you folks that teach at the conservatory.
Yeah, it's been a really happy place to work for many years now, and there's Sergio.
Were you the first one of there? Were you there first of the teachers?
Well, the first one, the people who are teaching there now are Larry Ferrara, David Tannenbaum, who's the chairman, myself, Sergio, who is going to retire, unfortunately, and then an early music specialist, Richard Savino. And David's been there the longest, I think, as the chairman. But I've been there for almost, I think, 25 years at least.
Yeah.
Sergio's been there the last 7. And everyone has their own interests. Everyone has very different backgrounds. And we try to make that a strength. We have good debates, and we go out for dinners and spend a lot of time together.
And so then that means that students that you have can get the benefit of several of you. It's not like you each own a student and never pass them around.
Yeah, we try to do that. I know there are certain places where teachers can be territorial and turf-oriented around their students.
We've heard of that.
Yeah, I don't think it makes anyone happy to be like that. So we do try to share our students have lots of cross-fertilization as much as possible.
Sounds really healthy.
I hope so.
And so you're native to the Bay Area.
Yep.
Have you spent your whole life there?
Yep, pretty much. My parents are New Yorkers, and they went to the West Coast to raise their family. And I grew up, my childhood was in Berkeley, and then I went back to the East Coast for college and graduate school. But
where?
Then I went to Yale University for a bachelor's and a master's, and then I came back to Berkeley, and I haven't left.
Yale is a really great place for a master's in music, isn't it? A lot of terrific people have been there.
Well, there's a lot of terrific faculty there, and obviously it attracts a lot of interesting people, and I thought it was a very stimulating place to be.
Nice. And so then as you learn to become a guitarist, you study, you learn to do all that stuff. Do you make conscious career choices, or do you just kind of go where fate leads you?
I think I must be one of the most bumblingly unconscious of all the guitarists I know. I'm not aware of a single deliberate move. I went to college, I got a master's, I came back, I had absolutely no idea what to do. I had no entrepreneurial abilities whatsoever. So like a good Jewish boy who went to Yale, I guess I went to law school. I didn't like it very much. I practiced the guitar. I was a terrible law student. I practiced the guitar a lot during law school just to sort of give me solace. I think I improved more in law school than in music school, and did a competition. It was a fairly well-known competition at the time, and I managed to win it, and the prize was a year of touring. And that really...
Which competition was it?
It's called the GFA.
Oh, the GFA. We talk a lot about that and the GFA winners.
Yeah, so the GFA has this great prize, which is a year of touring around the country in Canada, and now I think it's abroad. And so that was my first exposure to the world of getting on stage and playing concerts, and that was very exciting, eye-opening experience. And then because of that, I started getting some opportunities that came my way. But everything has been happenstance.
Mm-hmm.
and I never planned anything.
We'll talk a little bit more about where that, what that means and where that might lead you, but you have a guitar in your hands,
yep.
And you are used to playing, and so as much as we just enjoyed that CD, do you have a tune you'd like
sure,
to play
I'll play
for
something
us?
Slow for 11 in the morning. It's another Brazilian piece. It's a waltz by a wonderful composer named Paulo Balinati.
Great.
It's written for his dad.
The guitarist, Mark Teicholz, and this piece that we're about to hear.
Is this good for the mic?
Live in the Studio, a waltz by Paul Balinati, played for us by the guitarist Mark Teicholz, go ahead and get the microphone back up there.
Yep.
And have you ever been accused of being really uniquely good at voicing?
I don't remember such an accusation,
well,
but thank you for...
I'm going to accuse you of that, because what really strikes me and what we heard was the way each note had its own knowledge and function of where it was within the texture. And
wow.
Do you think about consciously, or is it just playing music, or what goes on there?
I think that's a hard question to answer. I think it's some blend of conscious and unconscious. Certainly when you practice, or when I practice, I try different things. I try playing it in different ways. I try listening to rhythmic elements or harmonic elements or bass lines or melodies, and I just, it feels a little bit like a laboratory, and I experiment with the different variables. But then there's some intuitive thing as well where you you just sort of gravitate in one direction or another towards what appeals to you.
And when you were talking earlier, my guest, by the way, Mark Teicholz, who's playing tonight at 7 o'clock at Gonzaga, we'll talk about that in a minute, that when you were talking about your background, and it seems like you weren't created by a guitar program and a teacher and that so much of it came out of you. And I've also heard it said that you're a uniquely good teacher. So talk about what you have learned about the learning process and maybe how to teach.
Well, thank you for saying all that. I don't know if I'm a good teacher. I know I love teaching. And I think I love teaching for a couple reasons that I can understand. One is I really love the diversity of character that my students bring me. I love the fact that when I go to a day of teaching, if I teach six or seven people that day, I'm going to have, I'm going to have interactions with entirely different kinds of people each hour, and that I'm very excited by that. And I'm very interested in how, even though you might be talking about the same subject, everybody takes to it in a different way, and you have to teach the person. You're not just teaching the subject. And that interests me a lot. And then I also feel like talking about music and trying, because to play music, you have to use your body, you use your emotions, you have to be intellectual and problem solve. You have to use a lot of different aspects of who you are. And to interact with the person one-on-one, discussing so many different aspects of ourselves, is a very humanizing way of being with a person, and I always feel really good in that kind of interaction. I feel like it brings out the best in both of us. Yeah. So it gives me a lot of pleasure, and of course I also learn a lot. When you try to explain how to do something, you have to think about how to do something, and often I come up with ideas that I wouldn't have on my own.
And tonight you're giving a concert, 7 o'clock at College Hall at Gonzaga. And you'll probably have two audiences. You'll have the guitar geeks, and then you'll have the general public who listened to the Guitar Hour or who heard about it, or students that wandered in off the campus.
Off the sleet.
Yeah,
yes.
Through the sleet.
Yeah.
And so how do you create a program?
Well, I think primarily it's selfish. I think to make a program takes a lot of effort, and I want to be very excited to work on all those pieces. And I think about if I were to sit down at a guitar concert, what would be an interesting program for me to listen to. So I like variety. I like a certain challenge. In this particular program, I'm going to play that waltz that you heard, the Brazilian waltz, and then I'm going to play a contemporary piece from England by Lennox Berkeley, who was a friend and colleague of Benjamin Britten.
And it's pretty famous. Is it a fairly famous piece?
It's well known in the guitar, in the geek community.
Yeah, and its title?
Sonatina.
Okay.
It's written for Julian Bream, who's a great British guitarist.
Sure.
And then I'm going to play a piece that's entirely too hard for me by Bach. That's an arrangement of a harpsichord partita. Mm. But I love working on it because it's really exciting to try to put all this counterpoint on a guitar. And then I'm going to play an arrangement of another piano set of pieces, miniatures by Schumann called Kindersen, which are sort of childhood reminiscences, portraits of childhood, states of childhood that Schumann wrote. And then I'm going to play a piece that Sergio wrote for me called Imbricata, which is a recent piece that he wrote, which is a beautiful piece. And I love Sergio and I love his music. Excuse me. So I always want to play something by Sergio. And then I'll play some Chopin at the end.
Yeah, and we're going to get to some Chopin in a little bit here. But three of the things you mentioned are piano pieces.
Yeah.
What are the challenges and what are the ways of meeting those challenges of playing piano music on the guitar?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's very tempting to want to play masterpieces by great composers. So there's always, I think, an allure to trying to get these amazing compositions on the guitar. But then you have to sort of do something analogous to translating a book into another language, which is you can't do it literally. You have to find ways to make it sound like it's a guitar piece rather than a guitar scaling the walls of a mountain to pretend to write to play a piano piece. And I would say it's a constant work in progress. I think, for example, in the box, some people think I've been spectacularly unsuccessful at it, and it just sounds too hard. But I keep working on it, and I get better at it, and I'll take out a note here. I might change a little something here and there, and over time, I improve it. And the Chopin Waltz, for example, which I think you're going to play a cut from, for a couple of years I would play that, and everyone said that one didn't work. But eventually I worked it out, got better at it, and now people tell me that it's one of the best arrangements for guitar they've ever heard. So unfortunately, if you want to be good at least in my case, for me to be good at something means I have to fail a lot initially.
And you have the bravery to fail.
Well, I get excited by a project, and I don't want to. The excitement trumps everything else. Well, sorry to use that word, but the excitement is the interest of doing an interesting project. It seems so. I don't want to give that up.
We're about to hear some of this Chopin Waltz, and layered on top of that was this really neat Volciana recording you did. You did on, what, 27 different guitars or something like that?
18?
A whole bunch of guitars.
18, yeah.
And what did you learn by that?
Well, that was a very interesting experience, because prior to that, I didn't know much about great instruments and famous guitar builders and things like that. And the guitar store in L.A., Guitar Salon International, invited me to record on their instruments. And so I learned about Torres and Hauser, the sort of the Stradivarius of guitar builders. Mm-hmm. And they had obviously an amazing collection. And we had the fun of taking some of their best guitars and trying to find pieces that would sound particularly good on them. So it was like being a Hollywood casting director, you know, this guitar would sound really good with Villa-Lobos, and that guitar would sound very good with Bach or whatever. And each guitar would have a personality. Some were delicate, some were robust, some were masculine, some were feminine. And so it was a wonderful learning experience about what the nature of guitars can be.
And so we're going to hear from this album, and then after that we're going to kind of go from Poland to Paris to Madrid or something, as in the second half of this show today. We're going to bring in a flamenco guitarist here who's here, and we'll have a little bit of discussion there. But again, this concert that Mark Teicholz just described is tonight at 7 o'clock at College Hall, which is the fairly nondescript name for the unique original building of Gonzaga University, right there at the vortex of the campus, in the chapel there at College Hall. Thank you so much for spending this time with us this morning.
Oh, it's really a pleasure for me. Thank you.
So we'll hear some of this Chopin Waltz, and then we'll do a modulation from there. Again, the guitarist Mark Teicholz. Thank you. A truly well-named piece is the Grand Valse Brillante, which was played there by my guest for the first half hour of this program, Mark Teicholz, who again is playing 7 o'clock tonight at College Hall at Gonzaga University.